All right, welcome to episode 81 of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. I'm your host, Jordan Prince, and I'm here today with your favorite producer and co-host, Mr. Moritz Batschheider.
Go, Jordan. It's a Thursday. We're going to party like it's a Thursday. What's up?
What's going on, man? Dude, it's... I have some... Actually, you know, I come to you today. We have a big topic to cover, but... I come to you today with actual content, actual stories. Finally, I did some things besides just kind of exist within my house.
What'd you do?
Well, the last 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday, were actually full of things, and that's pretty cool because I haven't had any things to do except feed and sleep and wait and eat and feed and change and wipe and sleep. And so I had booked, I think like 2 months ago, I booked this wedding to play a wedding in Austria. Do you know the area? Mühlbach am Hochkönig?
I'm not sure. Have we talked about this already? I'm not sure. I think I know, like, the mountain.
Hochkönig, yeah.
But I'm not completely sure.
I think I had mentioned that it was booked, but I didn't know. Yeah.
It's not so far away. It's part of the Berchtesgadener Alpen. And Berchtesgaden is on the German side, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, just on the other side.
I think I had mentioned that I have that job, but Tuesday, I finally did it. And man, that was such a journey. So first off, it was the first time driving that far since I've moved to Germany. Like, it was maybe...
We got to say driving on your own.
Driving on my own, yes, and yeah. In a new car and across a border. You know, I hadn't done that at all before. So the drive there was actually kind of... maybe the first half of the drive was kind of nerve-wracking. It's like almost 3 hours. It's maybe 2 hours, 45. Yeah. I think there was some traffic, so maybe it was just longer than it should have been. But so I had the GPS all set up, and I had like the music and the podcast ready to go. And I had so I was booked to play just acoustic guitar at this wedding for this couple. I had my suit ready to go in the back seat. I had the guitar ready. And I was kind of nervous because I haven't performed in a long time, you know, since our show back in June or whatever.
No.
And you know, the guitar, I haven't had any time to like take care of the guitar. I didn't have time to take all the strings off the headstock and clean everything and replace everything new and get it tuned. It was just like, I hope this works out, you know.
Like, I imagine your guitar being like this within the family, this jealous older sibling now that there are babies there.
Yeah, exactly. He's just turning and warping in the weather as he wants to get attention. But finally, so I had all that stuff together. I got in the car and I drove pretty far, like into Austria. And towards the end of the drive, I was getting comfortable now. Like, my foot was relaxing on the pedal. I was getting used to the speed of the Autobahn. And you know, stopped at a gas station. I stopped alone at a station before the border, bought a vignette, which, for those who don't know, when you cross into countries like Austria, you have to get a sticker on your windshield called a vignette, like a vignette, that basically allows, like, you're paying to, it's like a toll, you're paying to be able to drive on the roads in that country. Do you know if that's mandatory for every country in Europe?
Not completely. Like, it's a, we want to talk about German politics later, and there has been quite a story about the idea of bringing something like this up in Germany in recent years. But for example, in Germany, you don't have it. You just, like, in Germany, there is a toll, but only for like transporting trucks, but not for like regular cars.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, because on the way back, I didn't see anything like that. I didn't see any... I mean, maybe I missed the signs, but in the way back into Germany, I didn't see any sort of thing that was like, you must stop and get this. I wasn't sure if it was just in Austria or Switzerland or if it's just around. Anyway, so I did all that by myself, and then I got closer to the venue and realized, man, you know, I think they're going to be waiting for me at this pickup spot. I don't want to get to the pickup spot and then have them watch me change into my suit in the parking lot. So I was like, I got to go somewhere else. So I pulled into this like truck stop, this big parking lot. And strangely enough, just, you know, my luck, it was a Tuesday afternoon and it was just slammed with people. So I had no choice but to put on a show. You know, so I'm in this parking lot and I'm standing there and I wore like a flannel shirt and jeans and I got to put on this suit that I wore. I've worn it like 3 or 4 times. It's like the only nice suit I have. And I, strangely enough, it still kind of fits. But the funny part was I had changed my shirt and stuff, like standing in the parking lot. And there was this couple behind me eating ice cream, just watching me, which is really fun when they don't even try to hide it. They don't even try to hide it. And then I thought, well, shit, you know, I've got to put these pants on now. So I sat in the driver's seat, leaned the seat back, slid my jeans off, put them in the side, in the passenger seat, got the dress pants, slid those on. And it was at this moment when they got just about to my waist where I realized I've gotten too fat for these to fit properly. So, and I forgot my belt, which is just super cool to wear dress clothing without a belt. And I mean, there's outfits that are designed for that, but this is not designed for not having a belt. And so I had to get out in the street, like tuck my underwear down because it had been pulled up, and then tried to tuck my shirt in. And dude, I was just like stretching this waistband, like, please don't pop. Like, please don't pop off my big fat blubbery belly. Finally got it hooked and was like, I think it's going to be okay. And then I tucked everything in. I got in my suit. And then I realized I had taken so long to get ready that I was now like 20 minutes late. I just, like, pulling in, getting ready, I just didn't notice the time. And I had gotten out of the car to put the pants on, so I missed 3 calls from the wedding planner. And I was like, shit. I got back in the car. I got back on the Autobahn as quickly as I could and called them back. And it was a guy who answered instead of the woman who's running it. And he's like, hey, I'm going to be at the place in 3 or 4 minutes to pick you up. And I was like, oh, take your time. Take your time. I'm going to be there like 25 past or 30 past. Then you have to go through these tunnels. And past the tunnels, you just start going uphill. And you just start, you just start going in circles up and up and up and up and up. And my ears popped like 2 or 3 times. It was crazy high. And as I got up further, there was all this construction that I ended up being like 40 minutes late for pickup. And I was I was so nervous because, you know me, I'm pretty neurotic when it comes to performances. I'm really on time. I like to just stay at the venue if I can. And finally I got there, but I was lucky because once I arrived, it was actually good that I got there when I did, because I would have just had to wait around for that whole time that I was late. So now is when it starts to get kind of interesting. So now I'm at the location and this guy picks me up and we chat a bit. He's a local farmer and he's been brought in by the wedding planner to help drive a truck around to move all the furniture and things around because they're understaffed for the wedding. And I was like, okay. And they drop me off. And all of a sudden, I realized pretty quickly that there is no good communication happening here. Like, usually when you play a wedding, if there's a wedding planner, it's really strict. They say, stand at this spot. At 2:15, you start. At 2:45, you get a break. Then you go to this room with this sign and get food. Ask this person with that name tag where to get drinks. And then you start again at, you know, whatever. It's usually very, very strict. This had none of that. No paperwork, no signs, no notifications of like where I can go and what I should do. He drove me to the top of this mountain. And then literally when you're sitting at the top, it's all just sludgy, mushy mud grass, like where you step and you sink a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I instantly stepped out of the truck and boom, socks wet, shoes soaked. And I'm there in a suit. And I have wet feet and it's freezing. We're like 2,000 meters up or something, you know? We're forever. We're in the skies. And then he says, okay, walk up there. So he points to this final hill, like the peak of one of these mountains. He's like, go up there and you'll perform. Now, mind you, there's no balloons, there's no railways, there's no signs, there's no staff, there's no people, there's no crowds. I don't even see the bride and groom. I'm just there alone with my guitar on this mountain, this like rainy mountain with wet socks, and the dude drives off. So then I think, well, I hope someone's up there. And I trudge up this slushy, I'm hoping like, please don't fall in the mud. I finally get to the top, and there's a bride and a groom. They already have two little kids together. They have two girls. And then there's this mm-hmm. woman who's doing the officiation. So there's just these five people. And I go, oh, this is kind of like the Standesamt thing. Like, it's just the private, like, officiation. And they're doing it here on the top of this freezing mountain. And I go, okay. But so the wedding planner, this woman, she doesn't even show up to say, okay, you know, they're going to start right now. You just stand in this corner. You're going to play three songs. Nothing. Mm-hmm. I walk up and the family just stares at me and they're just smiling. And I just don't know what to do. So I say, hi, nice. Thanks for having me. It's a beautiful weather we're having or whatever. And they just laugh and they're like, oh, it's nice. And they just keep staring. And I think, okay, maybe I have to just start now. So I take my guitar out of the case. All the while, there's a photographer just walking around taking photos of them, watch me mm-hmm. unpack the guitar. So I get the stuff out. I tune it. Dude, this weather is murder for the guitar. It takes forever to tune it, dude. It's just like... Finally get it good enough. And then I just pick a spot, and it's like the wrong spot because the photographer wants me to go to a different corner. There's no one saying, here's what you should do. I'm just guessing.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to one spot. The photographer places me and says, this is a good spot for the pictures. I said, cool, whatever you need. And I just start picking random like major chords, just like some G and C, and make it all kind of pretty and like fluttery. And the woman just starts doing the officiation. So I think, okay, maybe they were just waiting for me to do this. You know, I thought maybe I would like play a song and then they do it. But I just start like, dun, 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 dun. And she's like, ladies and gentlemen, we're here to gather today to do this. I was like, all right. And then I felt kind of rude because I was playing while she was talking and it was just it was so intimate. And I felt so, I wanted to make sure I was doing it right. And just no one was saying what to do. And finally she got to a certain point where she took a pause and then she looked at me with this face of like, well, you know what to do, right? And I paused and I was like, just smiling at the bride and groom, like, this is nice. I just kind of said something like, this is nice. And the woman says, do you like to maybe play a song now for us? And I said, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, sure. So I just, and I had asked them before if they wanted any cover songs and they said no. So I just started playing Smilin' because it was like this short, sweet little track, you know?
Yeah.
So I played Smilin' and then they go like, oh, and then they finish it. Then they do the rings and they do the kiss. And this is where things start getting more complicated.
Like they finished it. Like I imagine like a wrestling fight or like a Smash Bros. fight on the top of a high mountain, and then they finish her.
Finish her, dude. That would be at least I would know what's going on. You know, at least I would say, okay, now someone's won. Now this is over. So I'm standing there. They finish it. And they kiss, and you can tell it's like, okay, now the ceremony's over. And in my mind, it's like, okay, they're going to take some photos, 10 minutes. I'll play around some guitar stuff. And then we'll go to wherever this reception is with all their family and all their friends and stuff. Mm-hmm. And nothing changes. They just keep taking more photos, and all of a sudden it's like 15 minutes, 25 minutes, 30 minutes. And I feel like a geisha in like the freezing winters of Japan because my fingers are numb. My knuckles have started to bleed from being so dry and cracked. I can't feel the strings. The guitar is like screaming out of tune every single chord. And I'm just dying up there. And finally, I get my phone out when they're doing some photo like further away from me. And I call mm-hmm. the wedding planner. And I'm like, hello, like what now? And she goes, oh, are you up there? Like, yeah, of course I'm up here. And I go over to the corner back where that truck dropped me off and she's down there in her car. She's waving me down. I say, oh, okay. So I pack the stuff. I walk down the hill and she says, wait here. Jacob, the farmer guy, is going to come pick you up again. We have to collect the stuff from on top of the hill. They had some table they sat at. And then we'll take you down to the new location. I said, okay. So I waited there for 15 minutes. I there was no bathroom. There was no sign of anything. So I went behind this shed in the forest and peed. Came back, mm-hmm. stood there. I think I sent you a message. I called a friend, talked to Efi, was just like, yeah, I don't know what to do. The truck finally shows up, takes me down, back to where I parked, takes me to my car. And I, he says, you can just follow me. So I get out, I get into my car, and then the wedding planner shows up behind him, tells him to go on. And then she screams to me, you know where to go, right? I was like, no, of course I don't. No one gave me an address. And she looks surprised. She's like, okay, well then, yeah, just follow me. I was like, I have to. I follow her, and she goes down some crazy corner gravel road off the main road. I would never have thought that that goes anywhere. Curves around, and we end up in this, it looks like a small closed-off neighborhood. There's like five or six houses on a farm. There's like goats and chickens and dogs and pigs. And there's like a big playground for like the community of kids. And there's a parking place. And we're going up into this neighborhood, and the road forks. And she waves, she sticks her hand out of the window and waves, all right, you go this way towards left. Mm-hmm. But then she drives right.
Quite an odyssey you had.
Dude. So then I drive up left, and I think this must lead to like the main reception building. Mm-hmm. Instead, it leads me to a old gentleman's driveway. I'm in someone's house's driveway. He's obviously not part of the wedding. He's on his front porch with a beer. He's smoking a cigarette, listening to the radio. And I'm like, shit, I'm in someone's like private property. Like, what am I doing here? You know? And so I wait there forever. I wait there like 25 minutes, and I don't know anything.
Oh.
I called the woman 4, 5, 6 times, no response. And I think, well, I don't want to be in someone's private property. I don't want to leave my car here. He might get it towed. I don't know. So I drive down to this parking spot, kind of this parking lot that we just passed once we entered the neighborhood, and I leave it there. And I walk down the road that she took. And lo and behold, I see down this road that she took, her and the Jacob guy are parked in front of this little chapel. And I go, oh, that's where I'm supposed to play. Why didn't they just let me park near it, you know?
No.
So I walk up there, and they're like, oh, hi, where have you been? You know, like, are you hungry? Do you want some food? And I told them, you know, I wasn't sure what to do. That was like someone's driveway. So I just parked down here by these cars. And she goes, oh, that's fine. And I said, so this is where I'm going to play? She's like, yeah, you're going to play here. Now, it was like 3:30, and she said we would start at 4. I said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, do you need to, are you hungry? Do you need to use the bathroom? I said, yes to both. And so she points her hand to that row of houses. And she goes, go to that house, like, go to that house over there. And there's a door on the left that's a bathroom, or that's a room you can go in and get food. But she didn't specify. I was like, this house, like, and I was like, this house with the thing, the chimney thing. She's like, yeah, that's that one over on the left somewhere. And I went, okay. And I assumed when I go over there, there's going to be like, I don't know, I'm just thinking of it traditional. There's going to be like some balloons on the mailbox. Or there's going to be someone outside in a suit who's, you know, in like a wedding
or
suit.
Or someone inside preparing, I don't know, some cake or whatever.
Any signs of a
wedding at the... Yeah.
Any signs of a wedding. So I walk back to that the house that I think it is, and there is no signs of life. It is someone's house. I'm on the left side. The door is closed. It's obviously a house that's being lived in. The shutters are closed. It just seems like someone's either inside, you know, keeping it cozy, or they're out for work that day. And I just don't know where to go. So I just decide to walk back to my car, and I sit in my car and I watch TikTok for 15 minutes. No food, don't know what to do. Start to realize that I'm bursting to pee. Got nowhere to go. So I get out of the car and I'm walking down the parking spot, because towards the end, there's like this big old trailer next to some trees. And I go, I'm going to go behind that trailer and pee. So I walk over there and I get right up next to the trailer, realize it's full of people. They're on some sort of, you know, like RV vacation, and they've parked there for the day. And they all like lean up out of their seats and turn around, and they look at me really suspicious. So of course I have to play the whole thing of like, oh, no, that's not where my bicycle is. What kind of tree is that actually? They told me this was going to be a different kind of bush. Well, they said there was like a little, a new school of kittens here, but I guess they must have found another, I don't know, and just walked back to my car and like deeply considered using an old water bottle to take my wiener out of my pants and pee into in my car at a wedding. Realized I can't do that. I can't risk pissing all over my suit. So I get back up. I walk back to the chapel and they're still there. And now it's 4:00. Now she says, okay, the people are going to start showing up now. So go ahead and get your spot. Here's some water and just get yourself ready. And they leave. And I say, okay.
So, let me get in there for a second.
Sure.
After all these kind of misunderstandings or weird, kind of instructions you get, why didn't you get back to that wedding planner and just tell her, okay, I can't get into this house. This other place is not where I'm supposed to park my car.
Dude, this woman at the chapel, this is the wedding planner. And when I arrive at 4:00, I tell her, hey, I couldn't find the house you were talking about. So I've just been sitting in my car. I told her that. And her and the Jacob guy, the farmer, they laugh. And they go, it's this one with the thing on the roof. Yeah, there's a door. It's on the right side. I was like, on the right side? So it's like a double house. And they're like, yeah, it's on the right. I was like, okay, well, you said left. And there was like, it was closed off. I was like, there's no sign. I even mentioned, I was like, there's no signs. There's no balloons. I wasn't sure. There's no one waiting there to guide guests or anything. And I'm still thinking that there must be like, where are the guests? I'm thinking there still must be like 20 people or something showing up at some point. No one in this area has any. I'm the only person in a suit, including the bride and groom. She's dressed up nice, but it's like something a little bit more casual. And he's Bavarian. He's got like the cloth vest on, and it's not quite Lederhosen, but it's definitely more traditional. So I just don't see anybody who looks like they're in a wedding. So I just tell them I can't find it, and she goes, "Well, just worry about getting some food. After, you're only going to play until 5:00. And I said, yeah, 5:00 is when I have to go because that was in my contract and I've already made plans. I have to get back home because it's a long drive. She said, okay, 5:00. So I sit down, it's 4:00. Her and Jacob leave me alone. So of course, the first thing I do is go behind the chapel and I pee in the grass.
Yeah.
Come back around, sit back on my chair. I tune the guitar. It's warmer weather where I am, so everything's fine. I'm ready to go. 4:05, 4:10, 4:15, 4:30. Now it's 4:45. I've been alone this whole time.
No one showed up.
No one has showed up. And the inside is prepared for guests. I call the lady and she goes, oh, I'm sorry. They just got back from taking photos and now they're having a pee and now they're going to come up. I said, okay, so they're coming now. She said, yeah. And I realized I'm getting paid to play 2.5 hours of music and I have played so far about 35 minutes total. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to, if I have to leave at 5, this is 15 minutes, you know? And so they walk up and that's when it hits me. The wedding was always only bride, groom, kids. The wedding was always only the couple and their kids, the ones I saw earlier. It was never family, friends, anybody. That's why I was always like, where are the people with the suits?
Yeah.
So they finally show up and I'm just playing them as they, so I'm sitting in a chair on the porch of the terrace of the chapel. I'm not even inside.
No.
I'm playing them as they walk up and they walk past me and the photographer is, circling around and they go inside and they get some champagne and then they start eating with the kids and I'm just playing whatever I want. I play like, slower sort of background versions.
Bon Jovi.
Dude. I was playing, back in leg, I hit the sack.
It's a great song for a wedding, Back in Black.
Yeah, dude, exactly. I started playing I was just running the gambit on like Simple Swimmer. I was playing whatever. And if the song sounded, this is funny, I didn't even tell anybody this. If the songs sounded too sad lyrically, but still pretty melodically, I just changed the lyrics. So I would play
That's nice.
I would play like the Crooked Rail, and the hook is I don't feel good anymore. But I just played it really like half the speed and like took my time with the, you know, picking out the chords. And then instead of singing I Don't Feel Good Anymore, I was just like, and I feel good with you. And just, I just changed it all. So that they thought it was nice. All love songs.
But I would tell you, because one like thing I realized with your music, especially with the new album and its perception by Germans, is that I feel like many don't get that twist between pretty happy sounding music and rather, let's say, darker topics in within the lyrics.
Totally.
Like many Germans don't even get it. So I think you don't even have to make that much of an effort to make it sound more happy.
Totally.
Because many people still think it's a happy song.
That's true, man. That's so true. I've experienced that a lot. Even with native speakers who just don't listen to lyrics, like there's a few friends of mine who just, they're American and they just don't listen to lyrics. They just kind of like la la la, like bop around, and it takes like a certain kind of listener who's actually invested in lyrics to catch that. But yeah, so that wasn't even an issue. So finally, at the end of the story, I'll wrap it up. So now it's like 5:15, right? I played longer than I wanted to because I felt bad.
Yeah.
And at 5:15, the kids run out. They've eaten. They're going to go play in the fields. And the parents come out to talk to me. And they've got their champagne glasses and they're very friendly. It's nothing on the bride and groom. It's their special day, but it was kind of the wedding planner's fault. I'd never had any information.
No.
So they come outside and I'm finishing a song and they clap and they're very nice. And we talk about how they booked me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting because their wedding planner works for a woman named Denise. And Denise is like the head of this agency of wedding planners. Mm-hmm. And Denise was the one that I made the contract with. And Denise had recommended me because she met me at a TEDx event in Munich that I played like 3 years ago.
What?
And apparently she likes the German language videos that I do. So they had turned down two musicians before me, and then Denise suggested me, and the wife told me, she's like, I loved your videos so much, like she found them so funny that she thought, well, I'll just see if the music's good, but I want him anyway. He just wanted me because they thought I was funny. I never had that before, ever.
But that's a good sign.
That's a good sign.
Because we talked so much about how it could be frustrating, like how good these videos work in comparison to the success with your music.
Yeah, totally.
But that's a story that rather seems like, okay, the one can benefit from the other.
Right, right. Yeah, I was really surprised that it worked out that way. So they said, yeah, we liked the videos, and that's why they booked it. They wanted something different. And I asked them why they didn't invite anybody, and they said, we're just private people, and if you invite someone on that side, you have to invite someone from that side. Before you know it, you have a huge event, you're just stressed out. And I was like, yeah, cool. And then I told them, I was like, guys, you know, I really, in the contract, I have it till 5. I don't want to let you down, but I have to go. And they seemed a little disappointed, but still, they were understanding, like all their plans changed, everything was delayed. Finally, I talked with them for a while, and then they said, okay, play us like one more song, play us your favorite song. And they sat down right in front of me, like a little concert, which was really nice, very flattering.
Mm-hmm.
And I played my fucking heart out. I played Daily Bread, probably the best I've ever played it.
Mm-hmm.
And also one half note up, because one string on my guitar, like the G string you've seen before, it buzzes like crazy right now.
Yeah.
And I had a temporary fix that broke, so it was just like when you strum it. So I had to do one capo up for every song that was open tuning. So I played it half note up, and it kind of worked. I pushed my voice pretty hard, but it still worked. And they liked it, and then I just left. And then on the way out, the wedding planner that was there, I had never seen her since 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to let her know I was leaving. So now it's 5:30. I gotta go. Gotta beat traffic back. I called her 3 times in that parking lot. No answer. Sent her a text that said, "Hey, the concert's over. The couple's happy. They're at the chapel. I gotta go. I'm sorry. Thank you for everything. We'll talk another time." No response. No text. The rest of the whole day. Nothing the rest of the whole day. So I got lucky because yesterday morning, I was back at the office for the first time in a while, and I wrote Denise, the boss, an email. And I said, you know, tell the lovely couple I appreciate being part of their day and that they were so nice to me, and I appreciate that they, you know, that they like what I do, blah, blah, blah. Tell them I said thank you. And then also, I'd like to give you guys some feedback because since you weren't at the wedding, I just want you to know, like, there's some organization issues that, you know, just to be honest, like, it's cool. I was happy to do it, but there's some things that could be fixed. I wrote this big email. 5 minutes later, she calls me, and I think, fuck. I'm in trouble, you know? When you send feedback and they call you, you're like, oh, no. She calls me, and at first, it sounds like she's kind of upset with me, like, why would I complain? I'm the one who didn't play enough time and blah, blah, blah. So I got kind of like nervous, like, oh,
dude.
Wait. Yeah, I got nervous, but it was a misunderstanding. She was saying that the feedback I gave was exactly what she knew had taken place because the other lady had explained that things were really chaotic and that they felt bad for me.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so not, she was so thankful that I took the time to write them things that they could fix for the future, that she's going to consider me for more weddings. And she said, she would do, this was the first time this happened too. She said, I understand that you had to wait around a lot and you couldn't find a bathroom and you never got any food. Is there a monetary value that you'd like to, attribute to that? We can add money to your invoice for mm-hmm. for that trouble. And I was like, what? No, man, I'm not going to take more money just because I've sat in my car and watched TikTok videos. I was like, that's cool. But in the end, it worked out great. It was just such a journey, man.
No, I believe that. But at least that's a cool move from them. Also to, I don't know, like you said, consider you for probably more weddings, because I think weddings are always easy gigs you like to do and that are often paid well, et cetera, et cetera.
Always paid well.
Yeah. And most of the time also kind of nice events.
Dude, good food, you know, and if you, if it's far enough away, you know, you get a place to stay over and then you can, you know, free drinks. Can't complain there. You get paid to basically eat their food, drink their drinks and just play songs. It's amazing. No.
Yeah. And I think it would have been super weird if they would have complained that you didn't play enough music because you were there the time that was, mm-hmm. as far as I got it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like part of the contract. And if they didn't want you to play within that time, it's not your freaking problem.
Exactly. And in the end, no one said that. So it was just a misunderstanding.
But that's cool, yeah.
That was very
sounds
cool.
Sounds like a fair deal in the end. But I still want, I wondered all of the story because I, like, you did good storytelling there, but I thought pretty early, okay, there won't be guests anymore. This sounds like a private bride and groom wedding. And but then I thought, okay, why do you need a wedding planner then?
That's what that's what my mom asked yesterday. Like, why, well, if it's just the two of them and their kids, why don't they got a wedding planner? I don't know why they didn't just do it, you know, in their backyard or something. And I don't know, but I was happy for it. And then, yeah, I mean, the second thing isn't much of a big story, but, you know, I think I mentioned before that I got hired to do the theme song for this new TV show.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah. Well, yesterday was the first time that I got to go to the production office and mm-hmm. meet the director in person and the producer and sit down in this cool room with the editor and watch the first two episodes of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that was cool, man. I felt like, okay, I'm part of a team now. This ball is rolling. It's done filming. They're in the editing now. And we made a plan with them. You know, I'm going to make some demos from home. I'm going to pitch them to the director. He'll pick his favorite. I'll take the favorite to the studio with Tim. We'll produce it into like a major song and then build these transition things out of that. They love it. And they said, cool, that sounds like a good plan. The show is super funny. I think anyone in Germany who has the opportunity to go ahead and set up their TFile Now account, this new streaming platform, that they should do it because I think this show has a lot of potential. It's very funny. If they like shows like Jerks, then they're going to like this. I think this is a good match for a show like Jerks.
Nice. That's cool. Since you mentioned Tim.
Yeah.
I was lucky to meet Tim. last weekend, right. And to see him perform, and it was great.
Yeah,
I sent you a video. Tim on a truck.
Tim on a truck, man. That's a good delivery service. What? Yeah, I texted him after you sent me that, and I told him I hope he has a good gig. I guess that's like the last open air he'll do for the year, right? Because it was
probably and it
kind of chilly, I think.
And already there, it got pretty cold.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine.
End, but
and who's the?
That was cool.
Who's the guy he always plays with? Christian
Blantz.
Christian Blantz. That's right.
No.
I've only, you know, I think I know Christian more through these old Clubhouse events that we would host.
Yeah, yeah.
Than from in person.
He used to, but hasn't he as well always been at the, like, so for our listeners, we talked about Tim, the awesome producer of your latest record and also the first one.
All of them.
And a good friend of ours. And what he used to do pre-COVID, which was awesome, like on his birthdays and his birthdays on Halloween, he used to host parties in his music studio, mm-hmm. which at some point of the night would turn into a a huge jam session because most people there would be musicians. And that was great. And I think Christian has also always been there. But yeah, Christian Blantz, they're called Blantz and Hacking, and they're they're a folk duo.
Yeah, like I mean, it's
Irish, it's, Scottish folk, etc.
It's very pretty. I mean, Tim is obviously an excellent musician, and Christian also plays good guitar. So the instrumentation is beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna miss that this year. I think I missed it the last couple of years because of COVID.
I talked to him. Probably if it could be possible this year, if he, I don't know, there's something like he checks if the people he wants to invite are vaccinated or something.
Yeah.
If that could not be possible again. Because remember last time when we came in from Munich with Mark mm-hmm. and we stayed at this this cool flat.
Dude, that was so right next to the studio. Much fun. That was so fun. I loved that. I mean, that just felt like a gig, you know, like I think that's, you and me and Mark have done that a couple times where we went somewhere in the South, played a show, or maybe we went somewhere else. I don't know where, but we stayed like, what was that show we played where you and me stayed in a room and Mark stayed like down the hall and we hung out and partied a bit in the hotel before going to bed? Remember the hotel wasn't paid for. I had to buy it out.
Yeah, yeah, and it was super far away.
Yeah, it was not near.
That was, we played two shows. One day it was in Gelsenkirchen.
Yeah, the Gelsenkirchen, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. That was also the gig where you kind of underestimated that Germany might be quite small, but not as small as you thought, and it could be quite a journey from Munich to Gelsenkirchen.
Yeah.
And
dude.
we had not enough money for like included in the in our payment for the gas, etc. That was a crazy, crazy trip.
I definitely lost money on that concert, but it was still fun. Still fun to do it. And that kind of reminded me of that, going to Tim's birthday, I guess, 2 years ago.
No.
And traveling down the trio and jamming out. And it's always fun to see the ghost cut loose a little bit. He's kind of, he tends to be quite reserved. Like, he doesn't really party. And he doesn't really even talk too much until he's angry about something. And then he's really vocal.
No.
You know, if he loves someone's music, he'll be very vocal. And if he's angry about something, then he'll be very vocal. Otherwise, he's kind of like,
you know.
But Mr. Bat, I'll let you take the major, I've stolen enough of the show today. I'll let you take the major lead on this next big topic we want to talk about, which is Germany's upcoming election. Because I know so very little about Germany's major political parties. I just know a few basics, you know, that younger people are, you know, leaning towards the Green Party, and that there's still somehow the Alternative for Deutschland, which is insane, and that there's parties like the CDU and the CSU, which the older, more conservative, wealthy people tend to vote for. But let's talk about it a little bit, because I'd love to know more as an immigrant here about that. That's a big deal.
That's a big deal, and I think we haven't talked so much about German politics at all.
Not really, no.
I would love to do this kind of, because you said you don't know too much about it. And I think we can work through that a bit, like stuff that you would like to know and probably is interesting for other artsy-fartsy immigrants that don't are too deep into it yet. But I also want to say right away, like, because of my job, etc., I know a lot of things about German politics, but I don't want to say I'm the guy who has the ultimate
sure
statements.
You can inform, but you shouldn't give, I guess, too strong of an opinion, right?
Yeah, and I also don't know everything. But first thing, because that's something that we saw. Like, okay, let's start there. The election this year might be the most important one for a generation.
Okay, and why is that?
That's for one reason, that for the first time in German history, like the reigning chancellor doesn't
right, Angela Merkel's
campaign
leaving.
Anymore. Exactly. That never right. happened so far. Like all her all chancellors came before her, like tried again, and at some point someone else won the election. It did not happen so far that one of the chancellors said right before, okay, I won't run for office again.
So it's the first time that the chancellor is saying, I don't want to run anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. But she's been there for like 16 years, right?
16 years.
Crazy.
And second, because, and we're just talking about why this election is so important in terms of what is new. And like, first, she won't run for office again. And second, as it looks, we don't know that yet. But as it looks, it's going to be the first time that it will take three parties to form a government.
So what does that mean, taking three parties to form a government?
Like as a coalition, since we do not have this kind of, and I know officially there are more parties within the US, but we don't have this kind of dual party system, but a lot of parties. Like in the last general election, over 40 parties in Germany could count votes for themselves.
Oh, right, if they have a certain percentage of
exactly.
Followers,
so
right.
you need and it didn't happen since like over 60 years that one party did gain the absolute majority of over 50% alone to form the government.
Okay.
So it most of the time it took two parties to form a coalition, and now as it seems like there are three parties like being estimated around somewhere between 17% and 26% or something like that. So it looks like okay, it's gonna take three parties to form a coalition and to build the next government.
And what
because
what are
probably
the...
two.
I was going to say, what are the three parties that are being chosen or that are elected for this? Or do we not know?
Like, what did you, for these campaigns running this summer, did you, and I know you've been busy with a lot of other personal stuff, but did you get any of that? What happened there with the candidates, etc.?
No, I'm very unfortunately quite separated from okay. politics in Germany right now.
Okay. So, like, the three parties that probably will have to decide over who's going to form the next government, like, is CDU/CSU, which
right,
which have their candidate, the SPD, the Social Democratic Party, and the Greens.
So it's CDU, CSU, SPD, and Green.
Yeah, CDU, CSU is one that's still a weird story. Like the CSU is pretty similar to the CDU, but you can only vote for them in Bavaria.
Right.
But they have a very strong voice within all of Germany and always had a lot of ministers within CDU, CSU. governments.
So if you wanted to vote for that party in Bavaria, you do CSU, but if you lived in like Nuremberg or Berlin, you would do CDU.
Nuremberg is still Bavaria.
Oh, sorry, I meant like Frankfurt. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing. And so those are the three parties that probably will get the most votes. And one thing that really annoyed me over this or these campaigns this summer, but also, yeah, we had this for many general election within the last years and decades, is this kind of, in Germany we say like Americanization of German campaigns. Because I don't know how much do you know actually about how the election works in Germany?
Only what I've witnessed from friends, you know, saying I've got to, you know, turn in my voting letter. Or now you can do it online, I think, right?
No.
Only with physical mail. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, because the big difference between like the US system and the German system is in Germany, you cannot elect the chancellor. You don't have this, like, I voted already, mail-in ballot, and I did not have the choice to vote for either Laschet, the candidate for the CDU, Scholz, candidate for the Social Democrats, or Annalena Baerbock, the candidate for the Greens. You do not elect for these. You just vote for the parties. That's a huge difference. And still, through the campaigns and these TV events, it's a lot like within the US, these debates where you have the candidates against each other. And it's always weird to me because I know, okay, this is interesting and they're one of these people probably will be the next chancellor, but I won't elect him. Should we probably talk about how the election works in...
Yeah, because I'm curious. I mean, it sounds like you're allowed to vote for the party, but you can't choose who runs that party. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. The system, and you get to know that, has been built up after the Nazi time by America and the other allies in Germany, and the German election system tries to, let's say, combine the benefits of direct and proportional representation. That's why you also have, like, you have two votes on your ballot when you vote. And the first one, with that is actually a direct vote. You vote representatives for parliament.
Okay.
For a certain district. What do you call them? Constituencies. Constituencies. Yeah. Like Germany is divided in 299 districts or constituencies. Mm-hmm. And for each, the parties have candidates. And that's like in America. The candidate who wins the district has a guaranteed seat in parliament.
Okay.
So that's going to be 299 people, which should be normally, doesn't always work, but should be normally like 50% of the seats in parliament. And these people you vote for directly.
Okay. And okay. So that's an option where you have like a name and you say, I vote my vote for that name.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And like one district is for like 250,000 inhabitants. So Munich has four. Mm-hmm. Like I'm in the district Munich. It's called, I guess, Munich North.
Okay.
And let's say, I don't know, you vote for candidate of the CSU or the Greens, I don't know.
Yeah.
And that candidate wins the district, has a guaranteed seat in parliament.
Okay.
And that should be, by the original idea, like 50% of the parliament, and the other half you vote for a party that has a list of candidates for each federal state, and they put candidates on the list and you vote for that party. And it should also be like 299 party delegates.
Wow!
And
okay.
There you have like the federal, yeah. And there you have like the federal system striking a bit. Like states with more inhabitants get to send more delegates, etc. Stuff like that. But first vote is a direct candidate from your region, and second is the party. And that second vote also like sets the outcome of the second vote, sets the percentage of seats one party gets within parliament.
Okay.
You get that?
Oh, man, it's pretty complicated. Or it sounds complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a little more complicated, but
I would expect nothing less from Germany. Yeah, I love that it's also 299, not just like a nice smooth 300 or something.
Yeah, the thing is, like normally the Bundestag, like the parliament, should have like 98 seats. So
yeah,
you should have these 299 from the one side and from the other side. That doesn't completely work out because like with the first vote you vote direct candidates.
Yeah.
And with the second the party, and the second vote sets the percentage of how many seats, like how many percent of seats one party gets. And that doesn't always match because, like I said, okay, the direct candidates from the first vote, if they win their district, they have a guaranteed seat within parliament. And okay, so it can happen that one party sends more direct candidates to parliament than they should by the percentage of the second vote. And so there's something called overhang seats.
Oh,
like
man,
they get extra seats because the people that get elected directly have a guaranteed seat. That's a bit weird.
Okay, yeah, that's weird.
But talking about the government and the chancellor thing, you basically vote for that with your second vote. Like we talked about the direct candidate and the part. Usually, the party who wins by having the highest percentage of votes,
mm-hmm,
proportionally gets to like propose a chancellor candidate. And that's where we get to, you cannot vote for the chancellor. Like I said, on your ballot, you have those two lists.
Right.
On the left, direct candidate for your district. On the right, the party.
And the party that party that you voted for wins, that party will select the chancellor.
Quasi.
Oh, come on. <It's>,
they
like, flip a coin.
The new, like, we talked about how the parliament is elected with these two votes. And
right,
there's a rule that says the new elected parliament must convene not later than 1 month after the election.
Okay.
And then usually the strongest party has coalition talks with other parties because
they have to work together.
There are so many.
Bit. Yeah.
Exactly. Because there are so many. It doesn't happen too often that one party gets this absolute majority of over 50% to say, okay, we'll like rule Germany.
Yeah, I guess.
So they need other
options.
Parties to come in.
Yeah.
Like the last coalition over the past 8 years has been, it's called Große Koalition because it's the
big one.
The two biggest parties, if you will so,
mm-hmm,
like CDU and SPD together. And yeah, exactly. So like if that coalition talks work out with other parties, let's say, I don't know, party A wins the election with, I don't know, 35%. Should not happen this year, but let's just for the example.
Okay.
Like party A has 35%, so they need at least one other party with around 15% to get over this 50% to have the majority.
Ah, okay.
And let's say that works out. Then they announce that, okay, we had, and like, then they have a contract, a coalition contract, where they say like, okay, because you have to do compromises in between the two programs of the parties. And if that all works out, and in that first like session in parliament, they propose their candidate for chancellor. And then the president, because there's not only the chancellor, but also a German president.
I forget that, actually.
Yeah. And the difference there is like the president is the head of state and the chancellor is the head of government. And the head of state, the German president, does not necessarily have that much political power. It's more like a ceremonial and how do you say, representative role nationally, but also internationally. But the German president, so completely other key figure here, presents the chancellor, and the new elected parliament then approves or disapproves in a secret ballot. So the new parliament actually elects the chancellor.
Okay, man, this is so much more layered and complex than I ever would imagine. I mean, I'm sure by now, well, actually, I'm not even aware if I can vote. But I think even if I could vote, I mean, of course, I would probably just follow the people in my demographic on what they believe is the right choice. And just, I mean, I think we both know what people in our demographic would say to vote for, and I would probably do that. But I wouldn't understand. Like, it's kind of like when you flush the toilet or when you throw something in the trash can, you know what you're doing. You know that you're putting it there, but you don't really know how, where the piping goes and where it ends up and how complicated the system is, how many jobs are in place to make sure it gets from A to B, you know?
No.
It's crazy. That's crazy.
Okay, so I hope I didn't bore you too much with all that
No, not at all. Theory. I mean, I'm definitely not bored by it. It's just, it's hard to wrap my head around it because it's such a, strangely enough, it's such a new system that I should have probably known more about by now. Because when I think about, there's a direct vote for this person, but then there's a direct vote for the party, and the party has to make coalitions to vote for a chancellor, but the president is as of the state, and it's just like kind of like a spider web. But I think once you've done it a couple times, you know, you get used to it.
It's a lot, and I think it is important to understand it, to I don't know, like really have a basis to understand what all the discussions and campaigns are about before these kind of important elections. And
we
talked about why this election might be the most important one for a generation in terms of what's new, like the chancellor won't run again, and it's probably will take three parties to form a reigning coalition. But also in terms of like huge topics and a time now that will be pretty decided for the future. Like, first of all, like economically, like the whole, how do we get out of this COVID crisis thing?
Sure, that's a big, of course. That makes a lot of sense.
Like economically, but also in terms of social justice and how, like, we'll be able to probably, because there is, and you know that from America, it's even worse in America, but it's also horrible in Germany, like the huge gap between the very rich and the very poor.
Right, the wealth gap, yeah.
Yeah.
It's such an extremely nuanced and complicated time to try and put somebody into office. And I think it must be kind of crazy to even want to be in charge of all this, because it's such a hard, like there's, like you're saying, there's so many extremely important and fragile topics that people are very passionate about on both sides, you know, getting out of COVID, the wealth gap, you know, social justice right now is very alive. And also like climate change is a huge part
of it. That's what I wanted to get next to, because it is probably, no, not probably, it is the most important and existential topic, because we know from scientists from all over the world.
Yeah.
That like in Germany, who plays a key role in emissions, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
Like this, the next 4 year, the next government is exactly like, the next government decides whether Germany, and because of Germany's role in Europe, like the most, Germany is the most powerful economy within Europe, et cetera. Like we'll set the, not only the tone, but we'll decide whether, like, if whether Germany and probably also Europe will get to goals that we've agreed on, like and signed, like the you, I don't think you know about the Paris Agreement.
Sure, yeah,
And stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Whether we will, if you want to make it sound drastic, but it's not false. Like the next government will decide whether there will be a nice and wealthy future for the next 2 to 3 to 4 generations mm-hmm. in Central Europe or not? Because climate change is not coming, it is here.
Right, right.
And there's a lot coming with that. Because the changes we know from science that need to be done very soon to get in a direction
yeah.
that we will not run into a total disaster sooner or later will be a bigger revolution economically, socially, etc., like the Industrial Revolution. And we have to make that effort within the... like, if you're completely honest, and if we want to make this work out, we have to do these humongous steps and investments and changes within yeah. the next 10 to 12 years, or it's going to be too late. So the next government is the one who makes the decisions
yeah.
That will affect whether that will work out or not.
And how do you feel that party, like if there was a coalition between CDU, SPD, and Green, for example, do you mm-hmm. think that that kind of coalition would take the appropriate, do you think they would take measures towards trying to do these things, like to help with climate crisis and to help with the wealth gap? Or do you think they would, you know, like which parties do you feel as someone who's voted and knows this stuff lean in the direction of trying to actually help these problems?
I think it's probably easier to talk about the parties like on its own, like okay, each yeah. party for itself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rather than probable coalitions, because coalitions mean a lot of compromises that
That's
need
true.
To be done.
That's true.
To
That's
make
true.
Them work together, and we cannot predict what kind of compromises each party will do in what department, but we can like easier talk about what each party promises or yeah. wants to do.
Because I can't imagine, I mean, it's I'm assuming, because it's in the title, that the Green Party is obviously making promises to have strong efforts towards saving the earth in different facets or one or another. But how is it with, let's look at like SPD?
Like, this is probably a bit oversimplified, but with those three parties, and there are still more that we could probably talk about, and probably also make sense later to talk about one or two more that could be decisive when it comes to building the next government. But like the plans, you can't put it another way, but the plans the CDU-CSU has for climate, like how to get on climate change and what needs to be done, we know already will not work out. Like they luckily we live in a political society where we are not at the point, besides like AfD, the far right weirdo party, but all of the other parties agree on, like, we do not have things like in the US with Trump and a lot of Republicans that just deny climate change and do not
right.
accept it, etc.
Right.
Like they all agree on, okay, we have this problem. It's like the biggest. It's you could probably call it like in Sherlock Holmes, the final problem.
Yeah, that makes yeah, that's a good name for it. Yeah.
So they accept that, but the measures are super, like, spread super wide, and the CDU CSU the ideas that they have will not make it work. You can't put it in another way. I don't wanna like. Like, I'm not on a campaign against them or something, but
right.
we know that by science, and also like the things that they have decided so far, and they were reigning for the last 16 years.
Yeah.
And as an example, like this spring, like the highest court for, I think you could translate it to federal constitutional court. Has decided that the decisions made by the CDU-CSU, but also they were also part of the government, you could say SPD, laws that were put in place to work against climate change in the like now outgoing government mm-hmm. are against the constitution because they endanger the freedom of future generations. Wow. Like the highest court on constitutional issues in Germany said that, like, the law that they have decided on is against the constitution. And it's more of that in the future. Like, the CDU, CSU says, okay, we got to do something on climate change, but we don't want too much rules. We don't want it too fast. And we, first and foremost, it's important that we don't, like, bother or harm the economy with this issue.
Man, that's so tricky. That's, like I said before, I think you have to be kind of crazy to want to take something like that on. I mean, someone has to do it, and a lot of people do want to do it, but... I wouldn't even know where to begin with the complications of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like a chess game.
It's crazy. It's crazy complicated. And I know that it seems almost impossible to, like, to get on this, like we called it earlier, final problem. And have everybody happy on the way there.
That's the thing. I think that's making everyone happy is just not gonna happen.
And that's what really annoys me about the campaigns of these three bigger parties, because in all TV debates, etc., especially from CDU, CSU and SPD, what came is like, yeah, we're gonna make all these things work out, and there are gonna be better wages for the people, we're gonna work on climate change, we're gonna get out of burning coal for energy, etc. And we're gonna lower taxes, and You won't be affected by anything.
You can't do any of that stuff by lowering taxes.
Yeah, and I sit in front of the TV and think, like, how's this going to work out? How do you want to make it possible to get after and get on these huge issues?
Yeah.
And it will have absolutely no consequences for us, the people that live here in this country. I don't see that working out.
No. No. I think things are about to get very hard, probably.
Yeah. So to get back to that point, like CDU, CSU is like, okay, their ideas for how to get on climate change, like, probably we won't reach the goals as Germany that we agreed on in an international deal. We won't get there.
Right.
What the ideas the Greens have, probably that would work out if they would, like, with their ideas, that would work out. But probably it's like, and that's the thing, would have like more drastic, quotation marks, consequences for everyone living in this country sooner.
Yeah.
And the Social Democratic Party is something in between there. Like, I think when it comes to coalitions, their ideas on how to work on climate change, etc., would rather fit with what the Greens have, but they're not as radical, if that is even the right word. They're more vague in, like, and they still want to, we know we should, we like, scientists from all over the world tell us, as Germany, we need to stop burning coal until 2030. And the SPD still wants to get out of coal until 2038.
Okay. It's a shame that it can't be figured out how to just stop it, but until a certain time, you know? Because doesn't that just repeat the same problems? I guess it's impossible to solve something like that so quickly, but it seems like, let's just stop, punching kids in the face only until 2038, and then we can punch kids in the face again. You know, it seems kind of crazy.
That's kind of the thing. And the arguments that come from rather conservative politicians, like, we should be out of coal by 2030, but we cannot do that. And that's not completely wrong, because we need that energy. Like, we need more electricity year by year. And we don't have, like, and that's the weird thing where I don't get the argumentations of many conservative politicians. Because they say we cannot get out of coal so soon because we don't have the infrastructure for renewable energies like wind, water, sun.
Right, they just don't have the replacement ready.
We don't have that.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we don't just know since yesterday that we need to do this, but for years and years. Yeah. And these, like SPD and CDU-CSU, were the parties in charge for many, many years now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one big thing. And that's going to be, like, since, like, climate change is that huge, huge, huge issue.
Yeah.
That's going to be super interesting and important what the next government decides on. The funny thing is, like, from a scientific point of view, it might be the most drastic, by far biggest problem, but as often as you have it within politics or within societies,
mm-hmm.
it's not only that people, like the voters, just care about that,
right?
Which is also understandable because there are so many issues and topics that affect people right now, like the whole how do we get out of this COVID crisis thing, what can we do probably against or regarding where you're coming from, like what can we do against or not,
right?
Like
right.
That people can't afford their like their flats anymore,
right? Right. It's
and
insane.
We have the strongest inflation in years, but the wages do not like line up,
yeah,
and stuff like that, and and think like the health sector, that we see that we have a huge issue and we need more people working there, because Germany is a pretty old society.
Yeah.
And that's also with this election where I see that there comes a lot of, I don't want to say anger because we don't know that yet, but a lot of frustration from younger people, because one third of the voters in Germany, like there are 60.4 million people allowed to vote in Germany this year. You don't need to register to vote. Like as soon as you're 18, you are registered.
Oh, that's cool.
And there are 60.4 million Germans who can vote this year. And one third of the voters is older than 60.
Oh, wow. That's a big gap.
And one number that makes it even more drastic, like 58% of voters are older than 49.
Okay, that's going to shift the perspective a lot.
And that's the thing where I see within, like, yeah, like our group of age, let's say anyone younger than probably 40 or 35,
yeah,
is a bit frustrated because they make just such a small amount of voters compared to all of these old people.
The baby boomers and the generation just under that.
Yeah. And that's... Mm.
That's crazy. And
that's
going to
be super interesting. And that's the, like, what I find super interesting, because if we talk about these problems like climate change, like this is an issue that should be important decisions made on right now, but right. For future generations.
Right.
And the thing is, we don't know, or we as the younger generations, and you, like being one of the younger, part of a younger generation, that just like has babies now,
right?
So that's the next generation,
right?
And we have to make the decisions for like the generations after us.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the generation before us, we depend on them and what they decide, because they make like 58% of voters.
That's the most frustrating thing. Is you're trying to tugging on the shirt of dads, like, come on,
yeah,
get with the new
please.
Thoughts. Yes, please.
Please do this for us.
Since the election is on Sunday, when do the results normally come in for a Bundestag election? Does it take days, weeks, months?
No, like days normally. Normally days.
So we could even do, so next week we could even do a follow-up with the results.
Sure.
And talk a bit more about those other two parties, because I think I already have to wrap it up, unfortunately.
That's cool.
Because there's so much to dive into still, and I think it is an important topic. So maybe next week we do a follow-up with what parties won, what was close calls, and what the divide, and what the next steps might be depending who's in the lead. I think that would be good.
And I can only... Yeah, and I think it makes sense because we talked about so many things, and I thing that kind of thrown so much over you. Like,
no, it's cool.
See, here's the system. Here are the parties. Here are the topics.
No, it's good. I mean,
go eat it.
I think it's good to split it up. Also, just because it's good to digest. Like, here's the foundation, and here's what we're facing, and then next week, okay, here's what might actually happen now that we know who's in those seats.
I can only recommend to turn on the TV Sunday night. And for you, I don't know if for you and probably all of our English speaking listeners that are interested in, do you know Deutsche Welle?
I don't think so.
Oh,
maybe.
Then you should. It's a TV and station, and they also have great things on the web and on YouTube.
Deutsche Welle. There it is.
And it's basically also öffentlich-rechtliche Anstalt in Germany, just like ARD or ZDF, but for foreigners all around the world. And those are German
news in English, right?
German news in English.
That's cool. I didn't know about this one. I've heard Deutsche Welle, but I didn't know what it was. But there's another website that I use sometimes called The Local, which is a similar idea, but I think you have to subscribe to that. I think this one looks free.
Deutsche Welle is free, and they do a lot of great stuff, and a lot of explanation and coverage of the election. And
This is gonna help me a lot. Thank you. Okay, and then I'll just wrap it up here for those because we push this one to later in the day. Tomorrow is Friday, September 24th, and I have a brand new song coming out with producer Tom Yanks called Waiting for Love. So make sure to go find that on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you listen to music. Check it out and give Tom Yanks a little follow because he's cool and you're cool too. Mo, thanks for all the info, man. I love that you're passionate about this, and I appreciate that you can help educate someone like me on this stuff. And next week we can dive even further into, like, okay, well, you know, these people are in the seats, so what's going to happen?
That's nice.
Cool, dude. All right, man. Well, I'm just going to, I'll, when I say bye, I'll stop recording too.
All right.
All right, buddy. So thank you. And thanks for listening. We love you. And we will be back next week. Watch your TVs on Sunday night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through. And it's all over now.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.